In the studio with me now is Latino USA's Janice Yamoka. Hey, Janice.
Hey, Maria. So besides the Futuro Media Group, what else is in Harlem?
Literally, we could throw a coin and hit the Apollo Theater. I mean, this is the home of the Black Renaissance. It is the home of Black culture. So we are in the thick of a really important part of American history, which is Harlem.
So talking about history, we're about 10 blocks away from a center called the Schomburg Center. Have you ever heard of it?
The Schomburg Center, yes. It's all about Black history, yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about the person it's named after.
And so here we have a Black man with a German last name with a Spanish accent in New York City in the 19th century.
His full name is Arturo Alfonso Schomburg. And while he did live in New York as an adult, he was born in Puerto Rico.
And so all of that, his very being challenges what we think of as Blackness.
That's Vanessa K. Valdez, associate professor at the City College of New York and author of
Diasporic Blackness, The Life and Times of Arturo Alfonso Schomburg.
Which means she's a Schomburg expert. So I asked her to help me piece together exactly that, the life and times of Arturo Schomburg.
So a lot of people who know nothing about Schomburg, aside from the fact that he has a library, they point to this moment as the foundational moment.
The moment that Vanessa refers to starts like this. Picture Arturo as a child, about grade school age, sitting in a class in San Juan, Puerto Rico in the late 1800s.
He goes to school and everyone is doing stories apparently about their heroes. He looks around and he apparently asks his teacher, well, what about Black people? And the response he got was, Black people have no history. A lot of people say that that's the seed for his interest in history.
And that's what starts Arturo on a journey to right this wrong. The notion that Black people have no history. Because to him, Black history does matter. The year was 1891 when Arturo arrived in Manhattan with a letter in hand, a recommendation from his employer in San Juan. He was 17, alone, or at least we think. He wrote about everyone and everything except himself. So historians are still trying to piece together information about his early life. At that time, the Puerto Rican population in New York City was at a whopping 1,500 people. Kind of hard to imagine when the current population is close to 800,000. And that wasn't the only major change. He didn't fit what a Black man in the U.S. was quote-unquote supposed to be, meaning English-speaking with Southern ties and certainly with no Spanish accent. That wasn't his case. For him,
Blackness meant everybody of African descent, right? Including Latin America.
So from the get-go, Arturo became politically active and joined the liberation movements for Cuba and Puerto Rico, which were under Spanish rule.
These two communities also have lots of peoples of African descent. So this is working class, Afro-Latino, Black men and women in New York City working for the independence of their islands.
Arturo was in his teens and 20s and had little formal education. But that didn't stop him from learning.
He's moving with all of these people. He's the secretary of Las Dos Antillas, which is one of the independence groups that he founds. He's working. I mean, he's right there in the midst of it.
He also started collecting information about his island. And that meant anything and everything, from newspaper clippings to pamphlets. Then, in 1898, Puerto Rico became a U.S. territory after the Spanish-American War, and the independence groups disbanded. Around that time, Arturo started going by the English version of his name, Arthur. Just like immigrants in the past have changed their name from Roberto to Robert and Miguel to Michael.
And so this notion of assimilation, which in here in the 21st century, we question, well, why would that be necessary? When at the turn of the century, it was at the turn of the 19th into the 20th century, it was almost compulsory, right? It was this idea that, like, no, you had to do this.
He began to write in English under the name Arthur. For him, it was just another way to get his voice heard, to get published.
He leaves the, quote-unquote, leaves the Puerto Rican community here in New York behind. He doesn't publish in Spanish. Seemingly, there's no written documentation of how he interacts in Spanish with these populations.
And that didn't please his critics. For them, it added to his lack of Latinidad.
When we talk about the question of language and Latino identity, Latin American identity in general, but Latino identity specifically, that is one of the markers, right? This idea of like, oh, well, you betrayed us. You don't really speak Spanish.
But even though he wasn't writing in Spanish, Arturo was still touching the topic of blackness within a Latin American context, especially during the Harlem Renaissance of the 1920s. Way up in Harlem at a table for two. Harlem became the epicenter for African American culture and arts, and Arturo was in the midst of it, and telling his black colleagues such as
W.E.B. Du Bois, Alain Locke, Claude McKay, all of these people, and he's talking about African peoples of African descent in Latin America historically, 16th century, 17th century, 18th century. You know, you don't necessarily have to be someone who walks in the door with obviously declaring like, yes, this is who I am, this is, but it's in his actions.
Arturo continued collecting history of all of the African diaspora, and over the years, it just kept growing.
It's not like he turns it on and off. It's not like, oh, okay, but like he just is collecting everything. It's pamphlets, it's prints, it's music, poetry, anything and everything.
He was well established as a black thinker. And by the 1920s, he was working with the National Urban League and the NAACP. His collection grew to the point where his wife had something to say.
You know, you have Mrs. Schomburg going, you need to sell your stuff.
At the Harlem branch of the New York Public Library, the branch librarian wanted to promote the community's racial pride. And what better time to do this than at the height of the Harlem Renaissance?
And she says, we need a Negro collection.
She wanted to tend to both the African-American and growing Puerto Rican population in Harlem. So she turned to her friend, Arturo Schomburg.
People actually go to his house and they assess his collection. And it winds up being bought for $10,000 by the Carnegie Corporation on behalf of the New York Public Library. And even then, there was this idea of like, that was too low because his collection really was priceless. And so that becomes the foundation for the Schomburg collection.
The Schomburg collection is the foundation for what we now know as the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture in Harlem. With his brand new $10,000, Arturo travels to Europe, specifically to Spain, where he continues to, you guessed it, find and gather books, art, anything and everything relating to the history of the African diaspora. A few years later, after a brief stop in Tennessee, after his time in Europe, Arturo returns to New York City and sees the city changing.
By the late 1930s, you see more peoples from the Hispanic Caribbean coming.
For Arturo, now in his 60s and still writing under Arthur, something interesting happened.
He sees what's happening with Afro-Cubanismo and public declarations of pride in peoples of African descent in cultural expression in the Hispanic Caribbean.
He sees the pride, people declaring, I'm black and proud, and I'm Puerto Rican, Cuban, Latino. And so he goes back to being Arturo.
And so I think you see I don't want to say a resurgence of pride because that implicates that he didn't have it previously. But I do think that it is an acceptance of himself on another level. I think also by the end of his life, he's pretty well established.
After all, he was a man with a German last name and a Spanish accent who challenged the idea of blackness in the U.S. in the 19th century. And even now, almost 80 years after his death, the U.S. is still trying to wrap their head around all that Arturo was.
The last, 10 years maybe? We are just now coming to grips with the fact that it is not a contradiction to be both black and Latino. Like, this is not inherently contradictory at all.
If Arturo arrived in New York City today, his experience may have been completely different. But who better than a black Puerto Rican to make sure our country's definition of blackness truly includes all people of the African diaspora?
And our thanks to producer Janice Yamoka for that story.